But first up this hour, that figure about Australian casualties that truly shocked many of us this week, which has nothing to do with COVID. The figure of 3 billion of our native animals affected by the recent terrible bushfire season, upgraded from the earlier estimate of 1 billion killed. In the copious headlines of alarm around at the moment, maybe this figure was slightly swamped, but surely it deserves to pull us up, whatever else is happening around us. This figure was released by the Emergency Leaders for Climate Action, a coalition of 33 former fire and emergency chiefs who convened their National Bushfire and Climate Summit earlier this year. Angela Frimberger is a vet from Port Macquarie in northern New South Wales, whose own small holding of 25 hectares suffered in the early days of the fires late last year. She's involved in two separate veterinary groups now, gearing up for some activism, Climate Vets and Vets for Climate Action. How does she balance despair and hope in this realm? Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Good morning, and thank you, Geraldine. It's great to be here.
That figure of 3 billion affected animals is truly devastating. You did see some of it firsthand, didn't you, on your own property before the fires became truly sort of spectacularly awful?
Yes, I did. The Lake Innes Nature Reserve in northern New South Wales was one of the earliest areas burnt in last summer's bushfires. Our fire began just at the end of October and continued for about 3.5 weeks.
And it burned through your property that you and your husband share. He's a vet as well.
Did
it happen suddenly, as everybody sort of talks about?
Well, the fire was burning in the nature reserve, which borders on our 25-acre block, for a couple of weeks, and we were just living with the fire kind of along our fence line and occasionally crossing the fence line by a little bit and then retreating for several weeks. And this was under the severe fire risk conditions. And then one afternoon, the conditions changed from severe to extreme. And it was a potent illustration of how fire behavior is affected by the ambient conditions, because the behavior of the fire just completely changed and it roared up the hill to threaten our home. And it came to about 20 meters from our home, and we're oh so grateful to the firefighters who stopped it.
Yeah, and you told me yesterday that it was a bit like a beast. And did it have a lot of impact on the wildlife? You deliberately keep it, the habitat for the wildlife. What happened to them?
Yes, so we keep our 25 acres mostly under natural bush to provide habitat for the wildlife, and we did lose about half of the wildlife habitat that we keep on our property, and we saw much evidence, obviously, of wildlife that were displaced. We clearly saw birds coming up and drinking out of our fire buckets that aren't the normal birds that hang around the house. They're birds that should be hiding in the bush. We shouldn't be seeing them. We saw sort of disoriented-looking wallabies who'd lost their homes and didn't know where to go. A kangaroo with sore feet that were obviously burnt from when he tried to re-enter the forest while the ground was still burning. We've seen displaced and starving reptiles in the months after the fire.
And tell us about the little tortoise too.
Yes. It's quite a heartbreaking story. On one of our fire patrol walks, we encountered a little tortoise that was trying to lay eggs in the soft sand of the fire trail, because she should have been laying her eggs in the edge of the lake, but that was on fire.
Terrible story. Yes. Now, have you been a vet who's been active? I mean, you've set up this climate vets, and you've joined this other action coalition. Are you one who normally does this?
Look, I've been concerned about climate change for a very long time. I have a background in biology before becoming a veterinarian, and my concern has deepened with the seriousness of the problem over the last 5 to 10 years. And now, as it's growing into a climate crisis, and then, as you said, being up close and personal with the impacts of the fires last summer has really kicked me into even higher gear. So Climate Vets was formed in 2016 as just a loose international network of animal health professionals, mostly as a forum for us to educate and support each other.
Did you need educating? How do vets, because they really are at the front line, of course, how did they generally behave in this sort of situation?
Look, most veterinarians understand the science around climate change. There's no problem there. The direct impacts on animals happening now is certainly coming into sharper focus in recent years than it was, say, 5 or 10 or 15 years ago. But most veterinarians are extremely busy and hardworking people and don't necessarily have the opportunity to be directly active in causes like climate change themselves. So part of the reason that Veterinarians for Climate Action was formed last year was to help to amplify the voices of those veterinarians who can't necessarily be out there, writing to their MPs every week or writing letters to the editor, to help those veterinarians' voices be heard.
It's been very interesting listening to the people involved in rehabilitation, vets and others, and just making a sort of, in a way, I suppose, cautioning us against feelings amidst all the horror, that sense of, oh, well, at least we can help. And those extraordinary pictures of the koala climbing up the bikes, to get to people's water canteens and so on. And vets saying, look, you've got to understand, this is just a dreadful commentary. These are wild animals who would never do this unless they were just so desperate that they approached humans like this, which was quite a change in the agenda, I thought.
Well, it is. That number that came out a few days ago of 3 billion wild vertebrate animals killed, injured, or displaced. And we have to remember that the many domestic livestock, such as sheep and cattle, that were also lost are on top of that. It's shocking, and it's really difficult to understand that number. But reading the report, it was derived carefully using the best available data and conservative estimates. So I am convinced that it's realistic, unfortunately.
Can I just say, one of our listeners has come through and said, what counts as an animal is an ant. These are vertebrates, are they?
Yes. So, yes, the WWF interim report, 3 billion number, that is vertebrate wild animals.
So it could be considerably more.
Yes. Yes. If we include invertebrates, it would be many billions more, without a doubt. So that includes mammals, which include the iconic wild animals such as the koalas and also smaller or less well-known animals, and many millions of reptiles, frogs, and birds.
Gee. Now, the Bushfire Summit noted something quite interesting. Currently, there is no requirement for fire agencies to protect critical habitat for endangered species because they're not listed in bushfire risk management plans, and that's the sort of local level management documents, of which there's quite a variety. And one of the recommendations from this Bushfire Summit was that all plans consistently identify and prioritise plans to protect environmental and cultural assets and accord them the same value as economic and human assets. That again is quite a shift arising out of this last shocking conflagration, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think it reflects the fact that what we lost in the fires taught us the value of what we have and what we still stand to lose. And we learned that how many of us value that natural environmental heritage much more than is maybe previously been recognized.
Well, I know you believe the predicament of the animals plays a tangible role in the healing of people in the aftermath of such calamities as the bushfires.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do need to regroup. And then going forward, we need to ensure better resourcing of wildlife efforts in future natural disasters, all kinds of disasters all across Australia. And as a veterinarian, that's a priority for me, is to ensure that animals are taken care of. But you're right, it's also worth remembering that taking part in wildlife recovery efforts can also be helpful to the mental health and well-being in those communities affected by the bushfire.
Or if they don't actually enter totally silent forests,
Yeah, exactly. So people who live near the bush do so for a reason, because they love that bush. And being able to be part of the healing is also therapeutic.
Look, final question, really. What do you think an individual listening to this can do, a veterinarian or otherwise?
Well, there are three things that we can do, because we know that the biggest driver of the severity of those fires was climate change. The three things that we can do are that we need to be able to talk about climate change impacts and stop avoiding the topic as if it's impolite. We all know ways to reduce our personal carbon footprints, and it's valuable that each of us should do the best we personally can. But we need to not only privately do the right thing, but also allow ourselves to be seen doing the right thing and normalize it. The next thing is that we need to vote with our wallets. They say that every time you make a purchase, you're casting a vote. So we need to think about what we're voting for, whether we're getting our weekly groceries or choosing our superannuation. Each choice that we make can be a force for positive change. And then the last thing, while we all need to tread as lightly as we can and put our money where our mouths are, we also need to elect policymakers who will work for the public interest. If we think that climate change is important, if we love animals, we need to keep that front of mind, make it an issue in the next election, understand what our candidates' positions are on these matters, and vote accordingly.
Look, I just have to ask you, thank you, after that list. Tony has come through and said, are there comparable figures for animal deaths in previous bushfires? It is hard to grasp the seriousness without such a comparison. I don't know whether you know the answer to
that. It is. Well, one figure that we do know is that in the Black Saturday bushfires in 2009, that a million animals were killed in those fires.
And this is a billion.
Until now, that was a shocking number. And it still is, but a billion is 1,000 times more than a million.
Mm. Is your property regrowing, by the way? And the animals, how are they going?
It is. Well, we've actually had one koala that had been displaced that was re-released onto our property. We know that we have koalas on our property, and so she was able to be released into a koala habitat area. And we are seeing plant regeneration, although, interestingly, a lot of it is weeds regenerating in the fire field. But it's also interesting to see that different areas are regenerating, and some areas are still barren and burnt, and we know that that's the area that burned on that very hot afternoon.
When it roared
up.
And
that reminds us that how much the ambient conditions impact on the behavior and the severity of the fires, which is exactly what the emergency leaders for climate action are talking about when they say that climate action so much impacts the seriousness of the fires we're looking at in the coming years.
Yes, and in fact, we're going to post some of the photos that you've sent us on
thank
our
you.
Webpage. Thank you very much indeed, Angela, for joining us.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to share this with your listeners.
Angela Frimberger, a vet from Port Macquarie. And if you may have seen the very powerful story from Philippa McDonald on ABC News last Sunday and part two on Monday, my goodness, was it powerful indeed. They're really, as people sort of delving deeper into the nature of the sheer incredible power of those megafires when they all came together. It was very affecting.